ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय राजोवाच प्रियव्रतो भगवत् आत्मा राम कथं मुने गृहे रमतयन्मूला कर्मबन्धा पराभवः. King Parikshit inquired from Sukadeva Goswami, O great sage, why did King Priyavrat, who was a great self-realized devotee of the Lord, remain in household life, which is the root cause of the bondage of karma, fruitive activities, and which defeats the mission of human life? Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. In the fourth canto, Srila Shukadev Goswami explains that Narada Muni perfectly instructed King Priyavrat about the mission of human life. The mission of human life is to realize oneself and then gradually go back home, back to Godhead. Since Narada Muni instructed the king fully on this subject, why did he again enter household life, which is the main cause of material bondage? Maharaj Parikshit was greatly astonished that King Priyavrat remained in household life, especially since he was not only a self-realized soul, but also a first-class devotee of the Lord. A devotee actually has no attraction for household life. But surprisingly, King Priyavrat enjoyed household life very much. One may argue, why is it wrong to enjoy household life? The reply is that in household life, one becomes bound by the results of fruitive activities. The essence of household life is sense enjoyment, and as long as one engrosses his mind in working hard for sense enjoyment, one becomes bound by the reactions of fruitive activities. This ignorance of self-realization is the greatest defeat in human life. The human form of life is especially meant for getting out of the bondage of fruitive activities. But as long as one is forgetful of his life's mission and acts like an ordinary animal, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, he must continue his conditioned life of material existence. Such a life is called Swarup Vismriti, forgetfulness of one's real constitutional position. Therefore, in Vedic civilization, one is trained in the very beginning of life as a brahmachari. A brahmachari must execute austerities and refrain from sex indulgence. Therefore, if one is completely trained in the principles of brahmacharya, he generally does not enter household life. He is then called a naistika brahmachari, which indicates total celibacy. King Parikshit was thus astonished that the great King Priyavrat, although trained in the principles of naistika brahmacharya, entered household life. The words Bhagavat Atma Rama are very significant in this verse. If one is self-satisfied, as is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is called Bhagavat Atma Rama. there are different types of satisfaction. Karmis are satisfied in their fruitive activities. Jnanis are satisfied to merge into the effulgence of Brahman. And devotees are satisfied to engage in the Lord's service. The Lord is self-satisfied because he is fully opulent, and one who is satisfied by serving him is called Bhagavat Atmarama. Manushyanam Sahasreshu. Out of many thousands of persons, one may endeavor for liberation. And of those many thousands of persons attempting to become liberated, one may achieve liberation from the anxieties of material existence and become self-satisfied. Even that satisfaction, however, is not the ultimate satisfaction. The jnanis and the karmis have desires, as do the yogis. But devotees have no desires. Satisfaction in the service of the Lord is called akama, freedom from desire. And this is the ultimate satisfaction. Therefore, Maharaj Parikshit inquired, how could one who is fully satisfied on the highest platform be satisfied with family life? The word parabhava in this verse is also significant. When one is satisfied in family life, he is doomed because he must already have forgotten his relationship with the Lord. Prahlad Maharaj describes how the activities of family life implicate one more and more. Atmapatam grihamandakupam. Household life is like a dark well. If one falls into this well, his spiritual death is assured. How Priyavrat Maharaj remained a liberated Paramhamsa, even within family life, is described in the next verse. King Parikshit inquired from Shukadev Goswami, O great sage, why did King Priyavrat, who was a great self-realized devotee of the Lord, remain in household life, which is the root cause of the bondage of karma, and which defeats the mission of human life? Today, we are reading Canto 5 of Srimad Bhagavatam, Chapter 1, Text Number 1. This chapter is entitled The Activities of Maharaj Priyavrat. King Parikshit is making a very serious inquiry to Sukadev Goswami. After all, Parikshit himself was a grihastha. Wife, children, occupational duty of king. When he was informed that he had been cursed to die in but 7 days, without a second thought, he left everything behind. Left his wife, left his children, his palace, his occupational duties, all of his wealth, prestige, everything, and accepted a life of total renunciation. He was living with the greatest renunciates in all the world, in that type of sadhu satsang. He refused to even eat or sleep. He did not want to waste his life. So this was obviously a very serious decision. It was not something whimsical that he just left because he was tired of that type of lifestyle. No. He very, very deliberately and intensely contemplated what is the best way to spend the last days of my life. Human life is meant for one purpose alone, the mission of self-realization. To understand oneself as different from this temporary body, and to realize the eternal nature of the soul in relation to God. That's all. Outside of the process of self-realization, the animals have provisions for eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, and the enjoyments therein. Producing family, so many animals are doing that. That is not a great thing. What is a great thing is to realize the eternal nature of the self, to surrender to Krishna. So Parikshit Maharaj, obviously it wasn't just a sudden decision. Through knowledge, he cultivated the understanding of the bondage of family life for many years. You can't just make a decision like that, like in an instant. He cultivated an understanding, a knowledge, and a realization of how binding these types of relationships are to material energy. And therefore, when the time came, he cut the knots of all his attachments, of every type of affiliation he had, except to just be in the company of renounced sadhus hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord. So this is Parikshit Maharaj's realization. And in previous canto, we find that Sukadeva Goswami is referring to Maharaj Priyavrat as being a very self-satisfied, realized soul who was living with Narada Muni in his renounced forest, enjoying just hearing and chanting and meditating on the glories of the Lord. And he got married and entered into so many very complicated family responsibilities. So Parikshit Maharaj is here asking Sukadeva Goswami, for the sake of the whole world, why? Why in the world would Priyavrat Maharaj want to get married and enter into all sorts of potential entanglements? This is how the fifth canto begins, with this question. And what we have in store for us for the rest of the fifth canto is quite extraordinary. According to Parikshit Maharaj, he says, why? Why did King Priyavrat, who is a great self-realized devotee of the Lord, remain in household life, which is the root cause of the bondage of karma, fruit of activities, and which defeats the mission of human life? There are examples of such self-satisfied souls. There is Narada Muni. From the very beginning of creation, Narada Muni was born of Brahma and had no interest. Immediately, he just adopted the life of renunciation and made the whole universal creation his family without any karmic bondages. He was just preaching. Narada Muni Bhajayi Vina Radhikara Mananami. Playing on his Veena. Ananta Nitai Prabhu. He's starting to follow in the footsteps of Narada Muni. Veena. Hopefully both your renunciation and your Veena playing will develop according to Narada Muni's footsteps. He was completely satisfied just chanting God's names. And therefore he didn't want anything to do with any material entanglements. Renunciate. And soon after, Narada Muni was the four Kumaras. Actually, Lord Brahma's service to the Lord was to procreate for the purpose of populating the universe. And he requested the Kumaras to do so, but they refused. Essentially, they said to Brahma, "We're not going to do that. You can tell us what you like, but that's the one instruction we're not going to follow. Because we understand how this type of relationships with wife and children, and then you have to maintain and all of these other things, is so entangling, so implicating, and so complicated. That imperceptibly you become bound up. You have to deal with this material energy. And that type of dealing is very potentially contaminating." Therefore they refused. And to this day, Kumaras are old. To this day, the four Kumaras are still brahmacharis. They're very senior brahmacharis. Although they have four-year-old bodies, they've been in the ashram a very long time. If any of us think that we're senior brahmacharis, 15 years, just compare yourself to the Kumaras, and you'll understand that you're just a very junior neophyte. That is the art of remaining humble. If we compare ourselves to people who are newer than us, then we can become proud. I know more, I've been around longer, I have more realizations, I know the ins and the outs. But compare yourself to Narada Muni or the Kumaras, and then you'll take a very humble position. And in more modern times, we find Raghunath Das Goswami. Raghunath Das Goswami had such immense wealth, and he has no competitors. He was the only child in the entire family, in the dynasty. He was the only male son. So there was no question of competing with brothers over who would take over which project and so forth. He was it. In Krishnapur, Adi Saptagram area, so beautiful home and so nice, loving parents, and they married him to a wife who was very chaste, of a very perfectly cooperative and sweet nature, and had the beauty of a heavenly angel, both physically as well as her personality. And he was very popular. Everyone liked him a lot. But he considered his ashram to be like an unbearable burning fire. He just wanted to escape. Can you imagine? He would accept no excuse.
He had so many social responsibilities, so many emotional responsibilities. There was so much pressure on him. After all, his father and his uncle were getting old. They're going to need help. Who's going to maintain them when they get old? And who's going to maintain the estate that they worked so hard to create? There was nobody else possible. Yes. And it wasn't that Raghunath Das Goswami was just lazy and didn't want to get involved in all that stuff. Sometimes people artificially want to give up grihastha life because it's just so difficult to just assume those responsibilities. But Raghunath Das Goswami proved how expert he was. When that Turkish Chaudhary arrested him and put him in prison, he demonstrated how he was so intelligent. He was just perfect diplomat. He was expert at everything. For him, it would have been a breeze to do all of his occupational duties. He was a brilliant genius in every sense. Tremendous capacity. He just wanted Krishna so bad. He wanted uninterrupted, undiverted service to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the Vaishnavas so bad that his family life was unbearable. Why? Everybody's nice to him. Everyone's cooperating with him. He has everything he has. He has no bills. He has no mortgage. Why was his family life unbearable? This is a mystery. It doesn't make sense according to modern estimations. Generally, family life is unbearable when the wife just is always like, what's the word? Harassing you, never satisfied, always wanting something else. Never, you know, why aren't you like this? Why aren't you like this, my friend's husband? Why don't you get me this? Why don't we have this? So many things. And also husbands are like that with wives to make their lives miserable. Or you have so many debts, or you have such, you know, passionate demands to maintain financially, or your children are just disobedient rascals who just embarrass you to everyone, in front of everyone. Yes. They want to be brahmacharis or marry someone out of their caste. So many problems that could cause you such difficulties. But Raghunath Das Goswami, he had no problems. His parents were loving devotees. He was so popular because his parents were so nice that Advaitacharya, Jagannath Mishra, everyone respected him and honored him because of the family he was from. As far as his work schedule, it could be any way he wanted it. He was the boss in every way. He's a huge landowner, no mortgage. Huh? And a wife that was 100% 24 hours a day totally cooperative. Now that might seem boring for some of you, but she was very sweet-natured, like an angel. So why? Why was he so eager to get out? Now in that type of a situation, if you try to get out, but then you're forced, by force, to come back, which he was. Every time he would leave home, his parents would actually have guards, physically, capture him and bring him back and put him back in the house. Hare Krishna. And that happened almost every day. It was practically a daily affair. He would try to escape and they would bring him back. Now that's enough justification for most people to say, it's Krishna's arrangement. Maybe I'm supposed to just live in this ideal situation. It was the ideal situation any grihastha could possibly ask for, what Raghunath Das Goswami had. but yet he was burning and longing to escape. And he did, by the mercy of Lord Nityananda Prabhu and the Vaishnavas. At Panihati, he prayed for this benediction. I'm just bound up and suffering in the bondage of family life. Please let me escape and attain complete shelter of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's lotus feet. And he did. And he lived such an exemplary lifestyle of renunciation. So there are so many such examples like this. So Parikshit, understanding how so many great souls who have taken to the renounced order of life have found this total inner satisfaction with no disturbances and no distractions. Now why Priyavrat? He was a brahmachari. He was a brahmachari living with Narada Muni, the Gandhamadana mountain, very holy place. Just in bliss, just hearing Narada Muni speak, meditating on the beautiful form of the Lord, hearing the glories of the Lord, serving the great sages. Why? Why did he get married? Should we end class here? That's where the purport and translation end. But we find this wonderful story that Swayambhuva Manu comes to the ashram of Narada Muni. And he is appealing to Priyavrat to take the role of king, which means to enter grihastha life. And Priyavrat, due to his etiquette and his culture, would not say no to his father. But he had no inclination whatsoever. By his not answering, he was giving an answer. Yes? He had no inclination whatsoever. And Narada Muni, he was very much, he likes people to take to the renounced order of life. In fact, Daksha, in the previous canto, yes, fourth canto, Daksha had two sets of sons. And he sent them to train up to be proper grihasthas. And Narada Muni just interfered with all of his plans and convinced them to join the brahmachari ashram. And all was Daksha very angry. The first time, he somehow or other controlled his anger and didn't say anything. And then he had to have a whole new set of sons, Haryashvas. And then he told his second sons that do not do what your brothers have done. They have disgraced me. I'm sending you to prepare to be first-class grihasthas. Yes? So they went. And there Narada Muni, he approached them, very persistent, and told them, your brothers are so happy, you should follow in the footsteps of your brothers. Why do you want to get involved in all these entanglements and bondages and so many responsibilities that just distract your attention away from the goal of life? So they were convinced. And they became renunciates. And Daksha was so upset. He was outraged. He actually cursed Narada Muni. That you have artificially taken our sons out of the proper process. According to the process, first they should enjoy family life, very nicely enjoy family life. And then through enjoying for so many years, while following regulative principles, they'll get frustrated with all these things and they'll grow up and gradually they just won't have any taste for these things anymore. And then they can take to the renounced order of life. When they're actually mature, they can take to the renounced order of life. But these are just kids. They're young. They haven't gone through the various stages of learning about life. You have artificially given them. This is very bad. They said many bad things against Narada Muni. And he said, you will never be able to live in any place. Narada Muni took that as a benediction. Last night in that wonderful drama, we saw Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He was cursed. Amazing situation. He had Vishnupriya, who happens to be Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune, and Sachi Mata, who happens to be Yashoda Mai. Now, I know some of you are good mothers, but Yashoda Mai? Could you imagine having her as a mother? And Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune, as wife? Very sweet arrangement. And that Brahmin cursed him. You did not allow me to enter your kirtan? I'm Brahmin. How could you not give me entrance? I curse you. That just as you did not allow me into that house, you will be kicked. You will have to lose your house and never again enjoy a home or a family. Haribo. Well, that's a serious curse. To a 24-year-old boy who's married in such a nice way. But Lord Chaitanya, he was blissful. He thanked him very much. He said, this is a benediction. I will take this as a blessing. In the same way, Narada Muni accepted it as blessing. Hare Krishna. So, brahmacharis, you are happy. Narada Muni had saw in his preaching what type of personalities he transformed. One was Prahlad. Now this is an interesting situation. Because some of the heaviest statements warning us against the dangers of family life were spoken by little Prahlad Maharaj, who was only 5 years old. Andakupam, itvatma patam in atmakupam. He tells his father that family life is like a deep, dark well. Have any of you ever fallen into a deep, dark well where there is no water but only suffering? And it's such a deep, dark well that even when you're crying out for somebody to save you, nobody can hear you. Have any of you ever been in such a well? Some of you may be in that well right now. According to Prahlad Maharaj. So he's telling his father this with realization. He has very powerful realization. Prahlad says to his father, give up this well of household life and just renounce everything and go to Vrindavan and worship Krishna. Hiranyakashipu was not ready for that type of preaching. So yes. And when Prahlad was instructing his classmates. Very intense preaching. Very intense. When he was talking about how one gets in the spell of the opposite sex and one how one just loses his intelligence and loses his energy and becomes spiritually corrupted, yes, and becomes just bound up by the waves of material existence. Powerful preaching, great realization. But yet, Prahlad got married with the blessings of Narada Muni, Hariro. So now we'll discuss this aspect of class. Prahlad, after preaching all this, got married. And he was married for a long time. He had children. Virochan, his grandson, Bali Maharaj. Yes, he had children, grandchildren. But he never fell into a deep, dark well. The deep, dark well Prahlad Maharaj is describing is Grihamedi life. When household life is centered around sense enjoyment, it becomes a deep, dark well. And that well would be easy to escape if you really understood how miserable it was. But the way Maya catches us, so powerful, that she keeps you trapped by making you think you're happy. Yes? When you're really suffering and frustrated, then you really try to get out. Yes? But when you think you're happy, or when there's some hope of happiness in that same situation, it's practically impossible to get out. Because you're making more arrangements to make your situation nicer than you are to get out. Yes? So when Prahlad Maharaj is talking about this deep, dark well where there's only suffering, there's no water, and no one can hear you cry, he's not just talking about the type of suffering that you're just in mortal pain. He's talking about from a spiritual perspective, the type of suffering where you think you're happy. Where you think you're happy and you think that there's hope for more happiness on the level of sense enjoyment and thinking yourself to be the controller. Very difficult. Very, very difficult. This is Grihamedi life. Where sense enjoyment, attachment to the temporary things of this world becomes the essence, the center, and the focus. Now, in the case of Prahlad Maharaj, to understand his consciousness, we can refer to the story that we are narrating today. Swayambhuva Manu is telling Priyavrat that you should get married and be king. Now, by this time, Priyavrat, he was a real senior brahmachari too. He wasn't a new brahmachari. His brother, Uttanapada, yes? His brother, Uttanapada, who was younger than him, he took the throne because Priyavrat didn't want anything to do with it. Now that's detachment. Priyavrat was better than an IIT graduate as far as the potential for his prosperous life. He was the heir to the throne of the entire world. Yes? Swayambhuva Manu, like the king who's directing mankind. And he's offering the throne to his eldest son. And the younger brother, Uttanapada, he would have been very, very happy just assisting his elder brother. That was natural for him. But Priyavrat gave up the... He didn't want it. He just wanted to be with Narada Muni and Narada Muni's sadhu friends and just absorbed in Krishna with no material possessions whatsoever. Huh? And this is when he was young. He made this decision. And his father honored it because he understood this is a very, very great thing that my son is doing. He wants to renounce the world for self-realization. This is very great. Swayambhuva Manu was proud of him. But still, he had his responsibilities. So Uttanapada became king. And Uttanapada, we know his son was Dhruva Maharaj. And Narada Muni also preached to Dhruva Maharaj. He was another such person who became completely self-satisfied in the renounced order of life, living in the forest. But Narada Muni told him to go back home and take the role of a king. Dhruva Maharaj had no inclination. He went to the forest with the desire of becoming a king greater than his father or grandfather. But he became so satisfied after purifying his heart and seeing Lord Vishnu. He didn't want anything. All he wanted to do was remember Krishna and be the servant of the servant of the servant. There was nothing else required in his life. But because it was the best way for him to serve the Lord, he accepted a wife and accepted the occupation of a king and lived in the royal palace. Yes? So as the dynasty went down and down, we find the Prachetas, who are descendants of Dhruva and Prachini Varhishat, there was no one to perform that role of a king within their dynasty. There was no one else. Haribol. So here we find that Swayambhuva Manu is approaching Priyavrat, who's been a brahmachari for a long time. Very senior man. This is what you need to do to serve. And Narada's on one side, and Swayambhuva Manu's on the other. One is influencing to a life of free renunciation, and the other a life of so many headaches and responsibilities of maintaining family and household and paraphernalia and kingdom. Yes? What people want to do, what they want to get involved in, he had no inclination whatsoever for. So Lord Brahma, who was senior Vaishnav amongst them. Within the universe, there's no one more senior than Lord Brahma. He's the father of both Narada and Swayambhuva Manu, as well as their guru. So Brahma understood Priyavrat's mind. And Brahma actually preached to Priyavrat and preached to the world that the concern is, on the path of bhakti, simply how we could best serve. In certain ways, we can best serve according to our natural inclination. And in other ways, we can best serve according to the need of the time. Yes? Certain persons, they just won't survive in the renounced order of life due to previous conditionings and previous lives, and in this life they just have, you know, too many desires. And of course, according to the Vedic system, Prabhupada explains, it's very healthy for everyone to get brahmachari training. First 25 years of life, get trained as a brahmachari. And if one is just
very satisfied with that type of life and basically satisfied just fighting against the agitations of the mind and the senses, then carry on, Prabhu. Brahmachari ashram is very nice. But if we find that we're disturbed, agitation is there, unless you're a paramhamsa. But if we're disturbed, if we're feeling lonely, if we're feeling, you know, this is just not inspired, not enthusiastic, too much distress, then it's not a proper, it's not a proper place where we're going to receive the internal encouragement to carry on with our devotional service. Srila Prabhupada explains, in the fight against Maya, we have to take a position where we're strongest. This was described in the pastime of Gajendra. Gajendra was a very powerful elephant, but when he was in the water, that was not his natural place. He didn't have much strength in the water. But the crocodile, he was strong in the water. Yes? So Prabhupada explains that when we're fighting against Maya, we have to situate ourselves in the place where we can be the strongest. So yes, if in the renounced order of life someone is very, very enthusiastic and determined and happy, just fighting the modes of nature like this and carrying on with sadhana and preaching and seva, then he's strong. But if we artificially try to be in that situation when actually there's just loneliness and long terms of just not enthusiastic and just this type of life is just not for me, then according to our guna and karma, because the four varnas and our ashrams are according to our guna and karma, according to our nature and according to our work, and grihastha ashram is appropriate. It's a stronger position for most people to follow Krishna consciousness. So that is one reason why a person would enter into grihastha life. Because by their nature, they're just stronger in that position. And the other is what we're reading about here. It's the best way to serve. Because ultimately, our whole life is not so much concerned with what ashram we're in. Our life is concerned with how we could best serve. Naham viprona chan narapatira napi vaishya na shudra. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, I'm not a brahmachari grihastha vanapras sannyas. I'm not a brahman kshatriya vaishya or shudra. I'm only the servant of the servant of the servant. My life is to serve. So how could we best serve? So Brahma told Priyavrat, you could best serve in this situation. You could best serve God and humanity by entering into family life and taking the role as king. And if you're doing it for the service of the Lord, you will be protected. And this is where the answer to the question is found. If we're actually performing our duty as grihastha in the service of the Lord, then we will be protected. Prabhupada explains the difference between grihastha life and grihamedya life is, one, sense enjoyment is the essence, and grihastha life means service to the Lord is the essence, where everything is centered around how we can best serve, not how we could best enjoy. But at the same time, in order to actually be in that frame of mind, that state of consciousness, we must be very, very honest and sincere.
In any ashram, we have to be very honest and very sincere. We find when Garga Muni came to the home of Nanda Maharaj, who's a better grihastha than Nanda Maharaj? He's the ultimate, supreme grihastha. He's eternally grihastha. There's nothing temporary about his grihastha ashram. We talk about dukkalayam ashashvatam, that grihasthas become, they become attached to the temporary things of this world, yes? Well, Nanda Maharaj, there was nothing temporary about his ashram. His son is Krishna. He's eternally the father of Krishna. Krishna doesn't even get old. Yes? Krishna's Navayovanam. And Yashodamai is his eternal wife, and she never gets older than she already is. Yes? It's quite amazing. Having a wife that never gets old. And you don't get old. And your son never gets too old. And all of his house and everything, it's all Chintamani. It's not material elements. Goloka descended into this world in Gokul. In this way, he's eternally grihastha. And everything in his life is eternal. But yet, still, in his heart, he's telling Garga Muni that, oh, great Brahmins like you come to the houses of fallen grihasthas because we're by nature so overwhelmed and diverted by responsibilities and so many distractions that it is our tendency to become so much caught up and enamored by the various considerations and responsibilities that we have in our life, that we forget the real goal. What's the real goal? To always remember Krishna and never forget Krishna. Now, Nanda Maharaj never forgot that for a moment, but still he's thinking he is. So this is a test for all people who are grihasthas. If you think you're very fixed up in Krishna consciousness, compare yourself to Nanda Maharaj as far as how much you're remembering Krishna and never, ever, ever, ever forgetting Krishna. And Nanda Maharaj is presenting himself in this way, that I'm just a fallen grihastha and I'm so easily diverted by all these temporary situations in this world and these responsibilities. Therefore, we desperately need the merciful sadhus to come to our homes to enlighten us, to awaken in us determination and remembrance of what our real purpose is. Nanda Maharaj is saying like this, Hariho, that you sadhus, it appears you're coming to a house of us because you're begging. Because grihasthas like to think that they're giving something, that they are the benefactors. But actually, he said, it's a trick. You come to beg, but actually you're giving. In the role of a beggar, you know, you're encouraging us to think that we're doing something wonderful for you, but actually you're coming to our house to enlighten us, to save us from Maya. To rechannel our energies and our consciousness toward Krishna. Because it's so easy to forget. People become so caught up in so many responsibilities, so many pressures. Have any of you grihasthas ever experienced anything like that in your careers? Akrura Prabhu, Hariho. That's the nature of the ashram. So Nanda Maharaj is telling So this is factually how grihasthas can live on the supreme path of perfection. By keeping Krishna in the center of their lives. Therefore, Thakur Bhaktivinoda prayed, Grihe tako vane tako sadahari boli tako. He was grihastha, he knew. And Narottam Das Thakur said practically the same thing in one of his beautiful prayers. And he was a Naistika Brahmachari. So we're hearing it from one of the greatest Brahmacharis and one of the greatest grihasthas in our history of Parampara. And they're both saying the same thing. It really does not make any difference whether you're a grihastha or a brahmachari. What makes a difference is your life is centered around Krishna. The focus, the essence of life is chanting the names of God, hearing about God, associating with the great souls, and being humble. Brahmachari, if you're not humble, you're not brahmachari. Because ultimately renunciation means renunciation of false ego. If you renounce everything else but not your ego, what kind of renunciation is that? It's not going to take you to the spiritual platform. So brahmacharis are humble. They're the legs of society. Yes? Legs are lowest part of the body. That's the way brahmacharis think. And at the same time, we learn from these wonderful, wonderful examples of great grihasthas how humble they are. They never think that we're great. We are the benefactors of humanity. They're thinking themselves fallen, desperately in need of association. And as long as we're thinking like that, then we'll reach out and keep Krishna in the center. So yes, Priyavrat, he spent many long years in Grihastha Ashram, but he was always protected by Krishna. Because the whole focus of his life was service. Service to Krishna, service to the devotees, and everything he did was with the blessings of great souls. And therefore we find throughout the Vedic histories, great personalities both in renounced life and in family life. And their examples, Mahajano Yena Gatasa Panta, their examples are very important to follow. Of the Mahajans, there are 12. Some are grihasthas, some are renunciates. Yes. And according to our ashram, we must follow in the footsteps. Of the 12 Mahajans, there's Narada Muni, who was Brahmachari, a devotee. But then there was also Lord Brahma, who was a grihastha. And then there is the four Kumaras, they're Brahmacharis. And there's Swayambhuva Manu, who's a grihastha. Do you know how many grandchildren and great-grandchildren Swayambhuva Manu had? There's a whole explanation in the Bhagavatam about how he lived. Everything was focused around Krishna. He performed his duties with so much enthusiasm and energy, but everything was centered around Krishna. Always serving the great souls, always just... He'd wake up in the morning hearing the glories of the Lord. He'd take rest at night hearing the glories of the Lord. Another great Mahajan, Bhishma. Yes, Bhishma, very famous brahmachari. But then we also have... Krishnananda Prabhu is reminding us of Lord Shiva. He was grihastha, Mahadev, and Bali Maharaj, Sukadev Goswami. So Mahajano Yena Katasa Panta. The path of bhakti is so powerful that if we just keep our life focused around devotional service,
by the mercy of Krishna, we will be protected and we will attain the ultimate goal of life. But we must be very sincere. And in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Leela, we have spoken many times. We have Swarup Damodar Goswami, who was sannyasi. And we have Ramananda Rai, who was a grihastha. We have Gadadhar Pandit, who is brahmachari. And then we have Nityananda Prabhu, who had two wives. And Srivas Thakur, who was married. Haribo. We have Rupa Goswami. And then we have Shivananda Sen, who Lord Chaitanya said that your family is my family because of his service. What was Shivananda Sen's mentality? He was grihastha. The Lord loved him so much and loved his family so much. He was willing to put so much energy to give compassion to a dog. Haribo. So charitable. And he was so humble. Now, this type of humility is almost impossible to comprehend. Even his wife couldn't comprehend it. But she learned. She was equal to her husband, but even she was having a hard time with this one. Shivananda Sen is working so hard. Everybody else is just enjoying walking to Puri from Bengal, and he's doing all the work single-handedly with a few of his assistants. They're arranging the accommodations, they're arranging the prasad, and the worst thing is paying the taxes. It's described between Bengal and Orissa. It said that on the path going there, there were these horrible, vicious thorn bushes in the form of tax collectors. And you had to keep paying taxes, and some of them were crooked and wicked and cheaters. Yes? And they had the power of the law on their sides. So he had to deal with all of them. Sometimes he was put in chains. At one time he was put in chains. He was put in prison because the tax collector was trying to cheat him and he didn't have enough money. Very difficult. And meanwhile, all the other devotees never had to worry about anything. And the amazing thing is Shivananda say never, ever, 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 ever complained about how difficult things were for him. He just did his service gratefully, graciously. At one time, he was really being harassed by a tax collector, and he sent all the devotees. He would send all the devotees ahead. You all go ahead, and I'll take care of this. And he was being harassed. He was being held up. He was helpless. And me, he was late. And Nityananda Prabhu, he said, where is Shivananda Sen? I'm so hungry. Where is my food? He's causing me too much inconvenience. I curse all his sons to die. And he said it purposely in such a way that his wife, Shivananda Sen's wife, heard his words. Now his sons were just little babies. Just tiny little children. What kind of mercy is this? Huh? And then Shivananda Sen just goes through all the difficulties of making everyone happy, and finally he comes back and runs to Nityananda Prabhu. And his wife tells him, on the way, his wife tells him that she's crying. She's really brokenhearted. She said, Nityananda Prabhu,
He was so disturbed that you didn't give him accommodation and food on time that he cursed all our children to die. Now that's not something you take lightly, Nityananda Prabhu's words. Yes? So he said to his wife, "Why are you lamenting for the inconvenience I have caused Lord Nityananda Prabhu? We all deserve to die." Haribol. And then he ran to Nityananda Prabhu to try to serve him. And as soon as he approached Nityananda Prabhu is in a very mysterious mood. Poof! Just took his foot and kicked him right in the, kicked Shivananda Sen right in the chest. Hare Krishna. Now, how many of you would be insulted by such a situation? Shivananda Sen just immediately ran and arranged the accommodation in a milkman's house and arranged prasad, and after feeding Nityananda Prabhu and giving him a nice comfortable place, after doing all the seva, then he offered his prayers. He said, "I'm so fortunate. I am so fortunate today that the lotus feet that Brahma and Shiva and all the demigods and all the rishis are longing to see for even a moment. They perform great lifetimes and lifetimes of tapasya to get a speck of dust from those feet. Today that same lotus foot has kicked my heart. I am so fortunate. Today my whole life and my family and everything has become auspicious because I have been touched by your lotus foot." And Nityananda Prabhu was so happy. And his sons didn't die. I guess eventually, but but Nityananda Prabhu just staged this. He wasn't really angry. He staged this pastime because he wanted to show the world, who is this Shivananda Sen? Why is he so very, very dear to Lord Chaitanya? And we saw last night Dwarkadish Prabhu when his own son died. In the role of Srivas Thakur. He was sad his son died, but his main concern is the pleasure of the Lord, because he had that faith. If we simply please the Lord, everything is auspicious. If the Lord is pleased, our son will go back home, back to Godhead. So let's just make Lord Chaitanya happy. So these are very, very profound examples of how the Grihastha can really keep Krishna in the center. Prabhupada said, when Krishna is really in the center, in this way, not sense enjoyment, but Krishna, service to Vaishnava, service to Krishna is in the center, then Lakshmi and Narayan lives in the house. Prabhupada says, the house becomes Vaikuntha. If Krishna is not in the center, deep dark well, Andakupam. If Krishna is in the center, Vaikuntha. Sudama Vipra. Krishna was so much in the center, whether he was living in a straw shack in total poverty or whether he was living in a magnificent palace greater than Indra's, made no difference. He and his wife and family were just doing the same thing, worshipping Krishna, chanting the holy names. The path of bhakti is so powerful because by simply, sincerely endeavoring to please Krishna with the blessings of great souls, the mercy of Krishna delivers us. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Garuni appeared as Janava and Vasudha, so it was proper that he marry them. But from another point of view, he could best serve as a Grihastha. Lord Chaitanya said, I've taken sannyas because that's the way I could best serve. Lord Chaitanya wasn't frustrated with his grihastha life. He was the happiest person in the universe. He took sannyas because that's the way he could best enlighten people in Krishna consciousness. But Nityananda Prabhu, he said, you could best enlighten people by becoming a grihastha. Very interesting. Nityananda was a staunch avadhut brahmachari. And Lord Chaitanya said, you could best preach by taking grihastha life. And Lord Chaitanya was a perfect, exemplary grihastha. And he realized, he decided, that the best way I can preach is to become a sannyasi. Haribo. So how do we understand these things? With faith. With faith. Mahaprabhu said, I'm sannyasi, I have so many restrictions, I can't go to these very, very, very fallen types of people like you. You can't either. But if you become grihastha, then you could do it. You could go everywhere, anywhere. Marry Arivo. And he did. So through this example, very, very wonderful examples, the Lord, yadyaracharatistrestastatarevetarojana. The Lord showed by His own example, as Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda Prabhu, that we are willing to accept whatever position that we could best serve. And what is the greatest service? By helping to enlighten other people to love God. Thank you very much.